The Fan Pregame Wednesday night. Ailish and Justin here for 1 hour. And it was the night before opening day. And all through the halls, Sportsnet was prepping a season of home run calls. On Blair, on Barker, on Schulman times two, on Campbell, on Hazel, and this year, Chris LaRue. Inside the renovated Rogers Center, the home run jacket was hung up with care, with thoughts of a World Series title dancing in the air.
What Ailish is trying to say is it's opening day tomorrow on Caleb Joseph in a half hour.
There we go. Anyway, pride on the line tonight between the Sens and the Sabres. 7 p.m. on Sportsnet. We'll have Frank Saravelli joining us in 5 minutes to tee up the final stretch before the playoffs.
And best bets and more, just like usual.
It is opening day tomorrow. I don't know if you liked my little song and dance and excitement.
I don't think there was a dance.
Well, internally. I'm excited. You know, we wait for this first look at the real Blue Jays roster, and we're going to get it tomorrow. And in honor of that, we're going to have a little bit of time today on our show, and our listeners can always text in at 59590 or tweet or send us a message. Some preseason awards. We're going to go through a couple: MVP, most improved, vibes, coordinator, fun guy, best newcomer, who's going to make the difference guy. Of course, the win total, which is set around 86.5, depending on where you look. The season playoff prediction, where the Blue Jays will end up, who might get the first home run of the Blue Jays season, and who might be the World Series champ. So throughout our show, we'll sprinkle some of those in. You can always send in your suggestions at 590-590. But before we get to Frank, it's our last chance to really make some bets between you and I. Preseason predictions.
Okay.
Who's going to be the Blue Jays MVP this year?
Now this is a head-to-head?
No, just...
Okay.
Who do you think is going to be?
Challenge. No. You're always challenging me to things, so I'm always on my
challenging
toes.
To just answer.
I think the MVP of the Blue Jays season will be Kevin Gausman. And I think the threat of losing him is what's going to underscore that. Of course, we understand Kevin Gausman's value to this team. But again, I think it'll be like the sigh of relief. And I don't want to say out of the woods just yet, but sigh of relief knowing that he's going to be around sooner than maybe we thought about a month ago. I think his importance is underscored. And of course, he's going to pitch really, really well because that's what Kevin Gausman does.
I'm going to go with Bo Bichette. He has been pretty damn consistent. I think this year he's taken even more strides in terms of his leadership, in terms of his prepared way he talks in front of the media, how much more this means to him. I can only anticipate him continuing to lead this team. So as an MVP, and I always think like an offensive player too, sometimes easier to circle as your MVP. Kevin Gausman, you only see once every five starts. I love Kevin Gausman. I'm excited to see his season. But I think Bo Bichette would be... If he is the Blue Jays MVP, hopefully we're on to a good start for this team. You can send your choices in for Blue Jays MVP, of course, at 590-590 or send us a message. I love the idea of somebody like Bo Bichette or Kevin Gausman, who already have these expectations, being our MVP. But who's going to be most improved? And this could just be because maybe where they were last year or where you think their floor is compared to their season, but somebody that needs to make the most improved hardware in
their closet. There's a few obvious candidates, right? But I think the player with the most runway is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in order to improve, right? Mm-hmm. Like the ceilings are set on a lot of players across baseball on the Toronto Blue Jays. And the ceiling is a little higher, as we know, for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. compared to what we saw last year. So most improved and MVP could be Vladdy by the end of the year. I think he would be my second choice for MVP, but he'll be my number one choice for most improved.
I am going to go with, I think, a popular choice amongst these parts, Dalton Varsho as the most improved player. I think that's also a bit of a shot at, not a shot, but like a bit of a sign that he has more room to grow. There's more expectations for Dalton Varsho. And I think this team's going to need some improvement internally. That's what they bet on this entire offseason. Dalton Varsho could be the guy that takes home that most improved candidacy this season. I'm hoping to see big things from Dalton Varsho. We're going to have more time to go through all of this and more. As we said, you can send in your picks at 590-590. But let's bring in Frank Saravelli, of course, of dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, how's it going?
I'm good. My pick for Jays MVP, not that it counts, would be Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Oh, you have,
and I'm excited to see the renovations.
Okay, so I mean, we can talk a little baseball. It's opening day tomorrow. Where are you at with? I guess you're a Phillies guy. We know that. How are you feeling about those Phillies?
Feeling like the expectations are lofty. You get to the NLCS 2 years in a row. Last year's collapse was epic, and I don't really know quite what to make of it all. Bryce Harper and a bunch of guys struggled through the spring. His back was wonky. I don't know. I go into this year with some trepidation compared to the pure excitement of last year coming off of a run to the World Series. And I just don't know if they can live up to the hype.
That's fair. I think the ceiling, if we're doing ceilings, pretty high for the Phillies, yes. Maybe higher than the Blue Jays. So it might be another exciting year for you, Frank. Okay, let's get to your wheelhouse, which is, of course, the National Hockey League. It was a busy night in the NHL yesterday, one with games that could be considered, you know, playoff caliber. But the one we were watching was not that, with the Devils and the Maple Leafs. It may be cherry picking a little bit, but the contrast between, say, Florida, Boston, and Toronto, New Jersey yesterday. Does that mean anything to you, Frank?
It does. I think when you try and size up what's, I think, the toughest sport in the world to predict, and you try and figure out who can win the Stanley Cup, knowing that 8 seeds regularly end up playing for a shot at it in the final, it's a dangerous game to play, but I always try and sort teams out by tier. And I just have, you know, Florida and the Rangers and Carolina in one tier in the East. I know, you know, hey, you didn't mention Boston. What's up with that? I'd probably have them in the next tier down. And then I'd have a little separate one after that for the Leafs. And then I'd have basically the wild card teams beyond that. And, you know, I just think we're splitting hairs at some point, but if you try and, you know, look at where these teams are heading, the pieces or holes that they, the stars that they have, the holes that they have, all sorts of different things to consider. I think there's varying points where the Leafs really look like a team that can be put together. And I think you saw that the first two periods on Saturday against Edmonton. The problem is there's too much inconsistency and different things that, as Sheldon Keefe alluded to after last night's game, that creep in at times that really make you question it.
You mentioned that the Bruins are probably in a tier below the Panthers, at least for you. The Bruins are 3-0 against the Panthers this season, though. Is there any significance to that other than, hey, we remember what happened last spring?
Well, that part kind of sticks in everyone's mind for sure, and maybe unfairly, because it is a different group. I just look at the Panthers and their size and their skill and, frankly, their meanness that I think just takes them to another level. Playoff hockey, we all know, is different than regular season hockey, and that's why I view Colorado as sort of the Western Conference version of the Florida Panthers, that there's just an extra element that exists with those two teams at the same time that they have the speed that enables them to compete with everyone else. There's really not a facet of the game that those teams leave unturned. And, you know, look, Boston, I think a lot of people have asked the question so far this year about their center depth. Charlie Coyle has answered a lot of those questions with maybe one of the most unheralded seasons that we've had. Certainly not getting enough credit league-wide for the shoes that he stepped into. And their goaltending has been outstanding as usual. But then I go and look at Florida and I say, why aren't we talking more about Sergei Bobrovsky? This exact moment in time last year, not the Florida Panthers starter, goals against average above 3. Mm-hmm. It takes that team on a run to the final and picks up this season right where he left off with a .916 save percentage.
Yeah, remember that battle in the playoffs didn't go too well for one of these teams. Let's keep it in the Atlantic. Lightning been kicking it into high gear as of late. 7-1-2 in their last 10. They're going to play the Bruins tonight, so a pretty good test for them. Have you seen something different about this Lightning's team as the Maple Leafs kind of have been forward-focused right behind them with 85 points are the Lightning, and they don't look like they're slowing down anytime soon?
No, the Lightning just have this incredible touch, don't they, where they can sort of hit the right gear at the right time. And part of that's experience. And part of it, to be fair, is some of the additions that they made at the trade deadline in a sneaky, we didn't have to give up a ton in order to do it. And I look squarely at Anthony Duclair and how he's played, the impact that he's made to this point in time. And I also look at the pillars of that team that really don't disappoint. Kucherov has continued to play and keep pace at that league leading level that has him neck and neck with Nathan MacKinnon in the Hart Trophy race. And, you know, at some point, Vasilevsky is going to, you know, step in and steal a few games. And Hedman has been tremendous this season and will be on my Naritz Trophy ballot somewhere in the top five. And you smash all those things together and you say, this is still a really scary team for someone to go up against, that's going to be their reward this year after a tremendous regular season is the Lightning in round one.
So, Frank, I know you don't look at it this way, but I'm watching this Predators run and I'm thinking, well, they got to receive some sort of recognition for this. And you just mentioned your Norris ballot. And I'm thinking about, like, okay, who could receive some sort of recognition or honor for what the Predators have done? Really, if we're talking about teams that have overshot expectations, I mean, they're the one that comes to my mind, and it might be recency bias, but I think they're deserving of that. Does Roman Josi, UC Saros, or Andrew Brunette have a real shot at winning one of these awards? Because if you asked me a week ago, 10 days ago, there's no chance. I don't think any of them are even being considered, really. But now, given what the Predators have done, it feels like they should get something.
I would say that of all three that you mentioned, the best shot would reside with probably Roman Josi. But even that, I think, is a stretch because, you know, he's been tremendous, like not taking anything away from him. But the whole season, Quinn Hughes and Kale McCarr have been tremendous. And Roman Josi wasn't that to start. And I still think the award is Rick Tocchet's to lose in terms of the Jack Adams. So you could probably cross Andrew Brunette off in terms of winning. And then next in line, at least in my book, would be John Tortorella. It's not an award that I vote on, but it's hard to argue with what the Flyers have done. The Eastern Conference version of the Preds, not really expecting much this season. Barry Trotz said on my podcast in November that he doesn't think the Preds are going to be good for 2 to 3 years. They've sort of blown that out of the water and are now not only a playoff team, but really only 4 points back of the Winnipeg Jets right now in the Central, quietly enough. And they're a live threat now in round one with Saros in net, who has been really good again, but probably loses the Vezina to Hellebuck, who I think should receive Hart consideration.
Yeah, 18-game point streak for the Predators there in that first wildcard spot. I'm starting to picture them as like the Panthers of last year, right? Running on that crazy high going into the playoffs. A lot of people doubted them. And then look what they did. I wonder how much of this success you've seen of late is playoff implications that you can see this team actually like maybe being a first-round upset. Whoever they get to play is a treat for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to me, Ailish, the big difference between the Panthers and Preds is depth and skill. Philip Forsberg has been unbelievable this season. And I love, by the way, that Ryan O'Reilly referred to his line mates as the Swedish meatballs last night, which is pretty well done. But I will say that outside of really their top players, meaning think of the pillars of that team, Saros, Josi, and Forsberg, if you want to throw in O'Reilly, great. They're just not the same, to me, stature as the Panthers, who rewind a year. They had a tough regular season, but the year before that won the President's Trophy and had an all-world year. So I think that's what, you know, it was just a Panthers team that had a ton of injuries last year that couldn't get their head screwed on straight with a new coach that then finally connected at the right time. And the other differentiating factor is, you know, and we say this, you know, of course, knowing that the Panthers beat a Bruins team last year that set all the NHL records in wins and points. But to me, when you think about what I was saying in terms of how I view the playoff picture and authentic chances to win, I think there's six incredible teams in the Western Conference that two of them are guaranteed already to lose in the first round. And I just view them on a totally different pedestal than the Nashville Predators at this point. They've certainly changed my viewpoint on them. And this 16-0-2 run is no joke. And especially when you get a night like last night where you overcome 3-0 and 4-1 deficits, like to me, that's a team that is built to at least make you think. But beyond that, I don't view them certainly as a coin flip or anything closer to that, considering the teams that they're going to go up against.
In terms of postseason stakes, I guess there's maybe just a glimmer tonight on Wednesday Night Hockey between the Ottawa Senators and Buffalo Sabres. I mean, it's you can't really twist it any other way. I mean, immense disappointments for both teams, I think, this year. Wanting to be the team that breaks through, it's maybe possible that no team breaks through because the top of the Atlantic is what it always is, seemingly, with Boston, Toronto, Florida, and Tampa Bay. But if you look at these two teams, like, is one of these seasons more disappointing than the other for you?
For me, it's the Sens. And I know that going into this year, the Sabres were the team that was closer to the playoffs last year. But there was so much hope. There's so much young talent that is, frankly, signed for so much money that you look and you say, how could this team possibly be as bad as it is? And yet they, even after making a coaching change, have really shown, if you squint hard enough, I guess maybe some little signs of improvement. There's something missing in Ottawa, and it could be as simple as goaltending. It could be a team that really needs to learn how to win and needs to have their feathers ruffled a bit in order to get there. Because I look at Buffalo and I say that's a team that, you know, has certainly some skill, and I love the way that they're built on the back end. I think they were just asked too much of players that were too young, too inexperienced, didn't have enough size to compete on a nightly basis. And the other part about the Sabres is they didn't start the year on time. If you look at their record really since January 1st, they're playing close to a playoff pace. I think they're on a 93 or 94 point pace since January 1st. Guess what that gets you? Nothing. Mm-hmm. You don't get to just wait until January 1st to start playing in the season. They don't award playoff spots for good 50-game seasons. It's good 82-game seasons, and there's going to be ups and downs and different things that happen, but both those two teams need a shot in the arm, and I'll take it a step further, and I'll say that both of these two teams, given how long it has taken them to get back into the playoffs, it has scared the daylights out of other managers that are in precarious positions with their teams and their builds, saying maybe these two teams are warnings of what not to do or how long it might take in order to do a full-scale scorched earth rebuild, that maybe it makes more sense to try and do it piecemeal and not totally bottom out, something like the Calgary Flames are trying to do, that the Rangers and Kings did, mm-hmm. that doesn't leave you in purgatory for so long.
Hmm. We're chatting with Frank Saravelli of dailyfaceoff.com. I'm going to open the floor if you have any Zach Hyman thoughts, any thoughts about hard work paying off, nothing, just anything?
Look, I've got a lot of thoughts. I think frankly, the discourse around Zach Hyman has been disgraceful the last few days. It started with someone that posted something on social media calling his goals ethical or unethical, as if somehow that's a thing that, you know, maybe he did or didn't do a certain percentage of the work in order to get the puck to the back of the net, like the scoreboard keeps track, like it matters. And then we saw the stuff that we saw that I hate to even give it more oxygen, but the fact that it kind of went at so many different factors and pressure points, you know, the least of which seemed to be some anti-Semitic tropes that were late, you know, weaved throughout that. Mm-hmm. Really disappointing. I won't stand for it. I'm going to call it out on my feed every time I see it. And frankly, I can't think of a time in the 13, 14 years that I've been on Twitter that hockey Twitter has seemed to align on one topic in the way that they did with this one.
Yeah, that is true. I've never seen all the pitchforks and torches from everyone headed in the exact same direction like it did yesterday.
Justin, you did have maybe one of the tweets of the day yesterday.
He almost
though,
didn't tweet it too, and I said, Frank, tweet that. And he's like, okay.
Cap friendly, but for family net.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be interesting.
That's why he's wearing a suit today.
That's exactly why. It's maybe an interesting transition to Josh Doan from Zach Hyman, given the conversation,
because of course
Josh Doan would have got some sort of at least some benefit being a young guy around hockey, certainly. But this is an interesting story, right? Because there have been few good stories, I guess, around the Arizona Coyotes. Mm-hmm. But if Shane Doan's son is something for the Arizona Coyotes, I feel like that could be pretty meaningful.
Yeah, and also the fact that he was a guy that was, as a prospect, overlooked at times, and sort of doubled down or circled back on his development and really took some significant strides. His story, there's a lot to dig through to tell you the Josh Doan story. Look, to in a year in which it's mostly been nightmarish for Arizona, not only were you expected after spending a bunch in the summer to try and be more competitive, they've sunk like a stone in the standings the last 6 to 8 weeks. And there's all this talk going on behind the scenes and totally authentic talk, by the way, about your team relocating. You don't have a defenseman under contract next season. There's a lot to unpack with how tough this Coyotes year has been, and Josh Doan comes in and bats a puck out of midair in the second period to just inject some life into your building, your fan base, into the suite with the Doan family. So love to see every part of it. It's one of the true feel-good stories of the year. And honestly, it was really tough for me to decide last night which brought me more joy sitting on my couch watching. Was it the Doan family reaction or that Zach Hyman scored the game winner?
It was a perfect night, honestly. And then the Doan family, some of them tarps off in the press box. Like, just, you know what?
Still trying to identify that individual.
Who was that guy? Do we know who that
whoever
man
that was?
Was,
they were yoked. And if I looked like that, I would never wear it.
That'd be my job. I'd just be going to boxes and celebrating with family.
I thought maybe there was like a, you know, a Mr. America.
Must work on the Doan Ranch.
It's like that, the inverse of that Cameron Cheers guy who's always at different arenas where he's like constantly taking off 9 shirts.
Yeah,
this guy was just absolutely jacked.
He probably doesn't own many shirts. Well, Frank, thanks so much for breaking it down. Good to see you. We'll chat next week. Have a good one. Go Phillies.
Have a good week, guys.
Thanks. Frank Cervelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. If you haven't seen, and I talked about it yesterday, I said, Doan is scoring tomorrow. Doan. And I couldn't find it anywhere on the books. Thanks, prop betting.
Because they knew.
They knew. And he gets two. Two, I didn't, probably wouldn't have bet on two, but I'll take the one. That was really lovely, though. It was nice to see. The Arizona Coyotes need some good stories. How about that?
They definitely do. I don't think Josh Doan can single-handedly prevent relocation, but a step in the right direction,
yeah,
perhaps.
This is exciting. All right, let's talk about best bets for tonight. I'm going into our Wednesday Night Hockey Ottawa-Buffalo matchup, 7 p.m. on the network. I'm just going to pick the over. Over 6.5, two sloppy teams, two sloppy goaltenders. It sounds like goals to me. Some people just maybe searching for personal goals as well. So, over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really going to argue with that. Ottawa-Buffalo screams over just in general. So I'm with you on that one. Exciting
their
one.
Their seasons
on Wednesday
scream
night
over, too.
Yeah, they're very close. The Lightning did not play last night. The Boston Bruins, excuse me, did. The Bruins coming off a great performance, though, and I could see why there'd be interest in them. But I think the rest factor and the fact that, you know, Boston really gets up clearly for these Florida games. I could sense a letdown here. Lightning near even money to beat the Boston Bruins at home. And the only other game in the NHL tonight, I got the Lightning -150.
Yeah, the Lightning's sneaky behind the Maple Leafs as well. So if you're
watching, incentive there for them as well.
You probably keep an eye on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah, Sens, Buffalo Sabres up next on the network. My goal scorer prop is Tage Thompson and Duclair. You want to parlay those are my picks for tonight. Do you want to tell people why you look so nice?
I've actually been getting texts of why you're in a sweater. You look like you're going to the
cottage.
It's
a bomber.
I'm dressed like I'm actually a professional broadcaster for the first time. So why are you not dressed up as the real
we're question. Both going to the Conn Smythe dinner after this, but I didn't want to sit here in a gown. But it's different.
You could have let me know that
you
we
look great. You
we
look like a pro.
To, just both buy
thought it was
into the dressing
funny,
up.
Actually. Our producer, Mike, you can't see him. He looks great, too.
Puts both of us to shame every day.
I just look a little disheveled. Not for long, though. We got 30 more minutes. I bet Caleb Joseph is coming in studio next. He'll probably be well-dressed, too.
Yeah.
I'll just take an L
you
for
can
today.
Count on that.
It's all good. Blue Jays opening day tomorrow. Excited to go through a lot with Caleb Joseph. He's going to come in studio after the break, and we'll go through all that, and we'll wrap up our show, and we'll head to Galiland with Justin Cuthbert. That's all next on the Fan Pregame.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. We are one day away from opening day. Of course, Blue Jays fans are all excited, and no one more than Caleb Joseph, who joins us in studio. Caleb, thanks for coming in.
Hey, you got it. Glad to be here.
And this is, what is the night before the regular season like as a player? Like, is there traditions? You guys have a big dinner? Does everyone get home and start studying, or should you already know everything?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything, to be honest with you. You want to hang out with the guys kind of one last time. A meal before battle, so to speak. It's kind of like Christmas Eve all in one, where you kind of know tomorrow's a big day, you're mm-hmm. anticipating it, and you're just so excited at that point to be out of spring training. You're so over spring training at that point. You feel like you've been in Florida for 3 years, and you're just ready to play a game that actually means something with the 26 guys that you're ready to go to battle with. It's one of the more exciting times of the year, and it's your body feels really good for that one day. Mm-hmm. And then the battle begins where you're fighting injuries and you're fighting soreness the rest of the year.
So you mentioned battle. Is there like a battle cry? Is there you've addressed a team before. Is there like something memorable from preseason where it's like, you know, there's something said or something's done or something that you can pull from the archives?
Yeah, there's always been a team or two here and there that have had kind of a pre-game, preseason meeting. You kind of have that first meeting when you go to spring training and it's, all right, guys, we're here to win a championship. And then that's with a group of 80 people, and then it really starts to narrow down. And then you get, with the 26 that are there, obviously there's going to be more, but you kind of have the chat, whoever kind of the team spokesman is, and it's like, all right, it's go time. Let's kind of go over who are we. I think you've got to answer three questions as a major league team. Who are you? Where do you want to go, and how do you get there? And so who are the Jays? What's their identity? And for me, that's the biggest thing is, what is this team's identity going to be? Are they going to be tough to play against? Are they going to grind out at-bats? Are they just going to pitch really well? What's going to be their actual identity? How do they get there? Well, first off, they've probably got to be healthy. And, you know, obviously they want to win the World Series. For me, honestly, just winning a playoff game would be a good start, right? And then just see where it goes from there. But you try and address those things right before the season, and then all hands on deck, and you try and start moving towards that goal.
What about those final cuts? Like, what's that emotion like? Obviously, you know, we'll find out officially the Blue Jays roster for tomorrow, but there's some guys on the fringe that, you know, worked really hard to get to the spot. They don't make it. And if you're a younger player and you're getting that opportunity for the first time, like, what is that mix of emotion like the night before or the day of?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've been on both sides of mm-hmm. that. I've been the last cut of a spring training camp, and I've been what I felt like was the last one notified that I made the team. So anxious and nervous, and you hope that your play at that point has put you at ease. A lot of times you feel like, man, I wish I would have done this differently, and sometimes you feel really good about it and you don't make the team. But it's a lot of nerves. The one thing that you can hold on to as you know you're kind of the last two or three standing is that you're probably the first guy up. And so I'm not sure if it's ever been done, but the same 26 guys play an entire major league season. I don't think it's been done. I would bet the farm that it hasn't.
Yeah.
So you want to put yourself in the best position to be the next guy up. And I've seen it a million times where opening day somebody is injured, and then you blink and guys that were slated to get on a bus or a plane to go to a minor league city literally turned right around and they were right in the big leagues. But it is a very anxious time if you're kind of on the bubble, the 26th, 27th, 28th man. Oh, it's sweaty palms and sweaty armpits for sure.
Is there much confusion? Not confusion, not the right word, but is there much speculation really at this point? Like, clearly you were in that position, but it seems like, and I guess we didn't know for sure, but it didn't feel like there was much that was actually at stake in terms of jobs, and there's injuries, and I guess that plays into it. But I guess it's more pleasant surprises than disappointments, at least for the Blue Jays?
I would say so. And some of it sometimes depends on what the organization sees out of other guys and how they want to complement. So your job might even be tied to somebody else's ability or lack thereof, not directly with the player you're competing with. It mm-hmm. might sound confusing, but there could be a guy that they're maybe expecting 850 OPS out of, and they don't really love what he's doing. So they might want to complement and turn him, think about turning him into more of a platoon guy early on, or they see something that they didn't think they were going to see, and they might want to give 70% of the starts to this guy. And so then the best overall form of the team might fit better with this guy on the bench and that guy, and then you're now the guy out. It can get really confusing. But yeah, more times than not, you have a really good idea, and when you're unsure, you're kind of hoping to be that pleasantly surprised. You know, but the kid inside of you that loves the game of baseball mm-hmm. wants to believe that you're still the last guy, and it's devastating when you're told that you're not.
So Jose Berríos gets the ball on opening day tomorrow. He's not the best pitcher the Blue Jays have, but you mentioned identity and setting a tone. I don't know if there's a better player for the Blue Jays to help set that tone from the very first pitch that flies.
Love it. Steady, very steady. And I look back 2 years ago at his season, and I've thought about this the last couple of days. A big transition going from the AL Central to the AL East, and most of his starts were in the AL Central, weaker division historically. He came over to the AL East, and he just struggled. He did not have the command of the breaking ball, and that was kind of his bread and butter that he really went to over and over and over in that division, and he didn't have it. And he showed up last year as a what looked like a transformed mm-hmm. pitcher, but he was actually just the same guy without the reliance on the breaking ball and it having to be there for him to have a good game plan. And I love what Pete Walker has done with him and giving him some weapons against left-handed pitching that has really allowed him to kind of survive. And that's what you're going to see. The big boppers in the AL East, most of them are left-handed. And I thought he really grew up last year in terms of not depending and relying so much on the breaking ball. And if it wasn't there, he could kind of bag it and he could go to two or three other pitches and locations. And then before you know it, in the fourth inning, now the breaking ball comes and then he's pitching 7, 8, 9 innings. But I love the demeanor that he has. He's a very steady, even-keeled human, great competitor. He's got a lot of fire in the belly. He might not show it on the mound, but he does. And hopefully it's a really good first start for the Jays.
He gets the ball tomorrow. Kevin Gausman probably would have been the day one starter, but with his injury, obviously going to ramp up a bit. I wonder the process. Well, first, the relief that Kevin Gausman's going to be hopefully all right, maybe just a little bit behind in terms of his ramping up process, and what he means to this rotation in terms of the big picture. Is he going to be the ace again? Can Jose Berríos maybe be the guy that Kevin Gausman was last year?
Yeah, I think you would love a scenario where it's 1A and 1B between those two. And yeah, even love what Kikuchi's done and just continually, steadily getting better. There was a lot of question marks his first year, but you go back to Gausman and he's obviously the bona fide ace of the club. And, of course, everybody in Toronto is super relieved knowing that there's not some massive damage, that it's just a matter of time before he gets back to the Blue Jays. But what he's looking at is to be patient. And you hear this word used a lot in golf, like just be patient. You'll know when it's time to strike. And what you want to do as a player coming out of spring training is you're ready to hit the ground running. You're ready. You want to help your team. It's the new season. You have new goals and aspirations. But being an older guy, he really has got to make sure that he comes back when he's ready, not when he wants to. So there's a big difference there. If he rushes it, the last thing the Jays or Kevin needs is for him to rush it and then have a setback. This worst word in a rehab is setback. So he's going to take it nice and easy, and he's a veteran. He knows his body. He knows when he's going to be ready. When he comes back, I expect typical Gausman, another very steady pitcher that knows his game. He knows his craft. He knows what he has to do. He doesn't really even need a pitching coach. When he's healthy, he's going to make the proper adjustments, and that's kind of the 1-2 punch that they're going to need, with addition, obviously, to Bassett and Kikuchi, to really keep this team afloat. Looks like they're going to really rely on pitching and defense again.
Yeah. So, you know, the buzzword, whatever it was, right? Positive regression, internal improvement, whatever you want to call it, that's been kind of the theme. And it's because, you know, that's what we're served and that's what we, take a little bit further than maybe it needs to be taken. But that is kind of the key to the Blue Jays season, right? At least offensively, they need to improve from within because, hey, there wasn't that many additions to supplement this roster. And they may very well improve offensively. But is it nearly impossible to ask them to pitch as well as they did last year? So if you're leaning on positive regression one way, is the negative regression the flip side of that?
That's a really good question. And that's what you struggle with as an outsider looking in on this team. did they do enough offensively to be prepared if there is a bit of a dip? And I guess it's to be determined. You're already starting the season down. You're kind of top two bullpen guys already, and that's coming from a bullpen that did fantastically last year. They really hit on all cylinders. They fired on all cylinders for pretty much the whole year. They were incredibly steady. You look at the health of the starting rotation, obviously outside of Alek Manoah, all four of those guys just carried the load. I mean, there was a long stretch of time, I think 3 weeks, maybe 3.5 weeks, where they didn't have a fifth starter. I mean, that's just almost unbelievable that they were able to not only succeed in those positions, but to stay healthy in those positions, putting those guys in a unique role there. Yes, that is the question that I have, is do they have enough offensively to keep the ship afloat if they have a step backwards on the pitching side? Because when you have a staff that pitching, starting pitching and relief pitching, that has the type of season they do, more times than not, there are going to be a guy or two that takes a bit of a step backwards. And it's just how the game cycles itself, so to speak. There's just so many adjustments going on. Do I like the offense? Absolutely. Do I believe in it? Yes, as long as every single offensive player on that team has the best year that matches the back of their baseball card. I know I said this last time, but they're going to have to do a lot, and there's a couple guys in the lineup that really are going to have to really outperform what they've done as Blue Jays members to really get this team where they need to be.
I think that probably starts with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and of course, this year, looks like John Schneider, talking to the media today, said that he's actually going to bat second ahead of Bo Bichette. So flipping that a little bit from last year, Justin Turner fourth and then George Springer leadoff. I wonder if you think that's just to try things out. Like, how long do you anticipate you go with something like that? You go through a couple series, you go through a month, you go through one or two games. Like, how do you know if this is going to be the look that they like?
Wins.
Yeah.
And how Vladdy looks. I think one of the biggest things that talking to Vladdy and people around the team last year was, I think Vladdy at times felt like he didn't have the protection that he kind of needed. And what happens when you are singled out as a hitter, and especially a Vladimir Guerrero type, that when you come in as a visiting player, you know you are keying in on a certain couple of guys, that they are not going to beat you. When you're the sole focus of that, when you have somebody that is what you feel greater or equal behind you, that you're going to actually get better pitches because they're going to fear the hitter behind you just as much as they fear you. So let's say there's a runner at second base, nobody on first base, base empty. In that situation where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is hitting and there's somebody behind him that they might not be as intimidated by, they might just throw some, you know, the pitch around. They might just try and intentionally walk him, trying to get him to chase pitches. Well, when there is a Bo Bichette behind him that can drive in runs, who I think is probably the best run producer on the team because he has such great at-bats. Doesn't necessarily mean home runs, he's just run producer. Well, they're going to think twice about really pitching around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because now a double down the right field line might score two versus a single that only scores one. So it's all strategy, and that's what I did as a catcher. I tried to look at all these equations and figure out, okay, do I really want to pitch this guy, or would I rather face the guy behind him? And if the answer is I would not rather face the guy behind him, they're both equals, then you're going to go after that guy a little bit more than you would if you weren't scared of him. So putting Vladdy in the two hole and having Bo hit behind him, I think is a good recipe for both him, both Bo, and the team as well. I just like what that combo does out of the gate.
So can Turner do for Bo what 100%. Bo can do for Vlad?
Length of lineup. There you go. So then you're putting a veteran guy who is a really good run producer and veteran run producer in Justin Turner back there, that you know he knows his way around this league. He knows it like the back of his hand. So now you have kind of two layers of protection where pitchers are going to really have to go through those three guys and really kind of pick their poison versus pick their out. And that was the challenge that I had as a visiting catcher when I was playing against the 15-16 Jays. It was, okay, is it Edwin? Is it Bautista? Is it Donaldson? Is it Smoke? Who do you want to beat you? Because you can't pick none of them. Like, you have to face some of those guys. And so you just try and pick your poison. And I think that's a situation the Jays could possibly have. But it's all going to depend on wins, right? Like, if they don't win and nobody's hitting, I would not be surprised if they shook it up 5-6 games into it.
Where are you at with Joey Votto's situation? Obviously, there's so much excitement around him coming to the team. He gets that one pitch, one moment.
Sure.
Then rolls his ankle. Mm. Do you think he's going to be a part of this team down the road, down the season? And how much is that going to depend on, I mean, what the Blue Jays think about, I guess, Vogelbach as well?
Right. Yeah, I think it's two-parted. I think a lot of it has to do with his health and how he really feels. Of course, you see the result after one spring training AB, and you're thinking, he's ready, put him on the team. But
put him in the banner, like yes, the rafters
that's
of the
right.
arena.
Level of excellence.
Yeah, there you go.
I think Joey Votto himself would tell you he needs more than one AB. And so he showed up a little bit late to spring, a little bit of a setback here, and now he's going to need quite a few at-bats to really feel like he's ready or not. And if I had to guess, there's probably an agreement where he knows exactly where he needs to be to help the team. I don't think he's going to want to come up and not be a productive member. But it also kind of depends on what Vogelbach does. This guy's known for mashing right-handed pitching. Well, that's kind of Votto's spot as well. And it's going to depend on, honestly, producing runs, in my opinion. If Vogelbach's able to produce runs, particularly against right-handed pitching, he might get a lengthy stay. They're going to play the hot hand. This team is trying to win. So they would rather win with a Vogelbach than lose with a Votto. And by no means am I saying they would lose with Votto, but if it's going the way it's going, they're going to play it. So I think there's a couple things at hand. Would I bet that Votto does have a significant part in this team, at least some significant at-bats that are going to really win some games? I would bet yes. I think at some point he's going to find his way into this lineup and have some really good quality at-bats and drive some big runs for the Jays.
Do the Blue Jays have enough offensively to employ someone who is one-dimensional like Vogelbach? Like, it seems very specific. Mash, right-handed pitchers late in the game. It seemed like there was more than just one issue for the Blue Jays, of course, offensively last season. Can you be that specific? Can you be, like, square peg, square hole if you're Vogelbach at this point? Like, Votto does offer more, sure. I suppose, if he can get there. But for now, in that role where it's very specific, is there enough utility there from him?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think they're content with where they're at. I think that this is kind of where they're going. I think they have a very specific role for him, and they feel like with the other supporting pieces that they can mix and match to get the desired outcomes that they're wanting. When you look at the output, you're looking at a game, and you're looking at certain statistics, and you're looking at certain percentages of what the best percentages are. And obviously they believe that Vogelbach in certain spots on certain days versus certain types of pitchers versus certain handed pitchers, their best shot is right there. And you just kind of roll the dice and lay the chips out on the table and see where they fall. It does bring a one-dimensional part that we're not necessarily accustomed to seeing last couple years with the Jays, a lot of versatility. But they've also been lacking with some thunder off the bench as well, where guys were pinch hitting in the seventh and eighth inning off of some really tough relievers that didn't have that long ball in their back pocket. And the fear of the long ball does something to relief pitchers. When they know that your best bullet is a double to left center field, they will pitch you differently. If they think you can hit the ball out of the ballpark, you will be pitched differently. There will be a little bit more anxiety in the hand, in the mind. And it doesn't matter if it's a Vogelbach or if it's a Juan Soto. Like, if there's a fear of the long ball, you will get pitched differently. So I think they're trying a little bit different strategy here, with knowing that if it doesn't work out, they can pivot in a couple other directions.
Yeah, perhaps there are limitations to the Jacks of all trades. Last one for you, Caleb. What gives you the most hope for the Blue Jays this season?
Well, what gives me the most hope is the fact that this is a good team. Are they a great team? To be determined. But if you look at, and I've said this a million times, people are probably sick and tired of it. If you look at each individual hitter on this team and you look at the back of their baseball card and you look at their best season, you look at the combination of a Jansen Kirk, you look at any combination of the guys that are going to be playing third base, Bo's best season, same thing at second base, Vladdy's best season. Then you look at what Springer has done. You look at Vogelbach, his potential there. You can see that if it all comes together, it can play. It can play, and they've been good enough to make it to the playoffs. Now it's about what does it take to get to the next level. And I think a lot of it has to do with just continuing to stay healthy. Like, you just got to get in, and then you see what happens. Look at my Nashville Predators. I mean, they were a nobody.
They're
and
red
now
hot.
It's like, wait, this team's got a chance. But they didn't look like anything at the beginning, mm-hmm. and now they've added some compliments at the trade deadline. So that's another piece, too, is like, can you give enough hope and inspiration to the general manager to, if there are some glaring needs, go out and do something. But I do understand the sentiment with Toronto fans that, like, this feels like rinse, repeat. Mm-hmm. Don't fool me again. Mm-hmm. I do understand that. But if you look at every player's best season, it would match up very well to a team that can go deep.
What about the Preds missing the U2 concert? Do you think it actually sparked that? Look at them now. They didn't go to the Sphere. They didn't go to the U2 concert, and they're, what, 16-0-2 since then?
They've lost.
That's good coaching.
Mm.
You need John Schneider to say no, you know, boots and hearts this summer, kids.
No home run jacket. Yeah. Oh, wait, too early?
Is there one coming? What do you think?
Yeah,
do you
have the inside scoop? I think it'll be back. Oh. I think.
We got to figure out where it was kept. I'm
probably need some mothballs.
What closet has it been in this time?
Well, Caleb, a big one tomorrow. Appreciate you coming in, stopping by. I know you've been sharing your wisdom amongst all of our station and all of our networks, so appreciate it. Get some rest. It's like, you know, your big night. It's like the feelings you used to have. But
opening
you're not getting cut.
Too, right?
Yeah, there you go. You got the restaurant beforehand and maybe a rallying cry.
Thanks, Caleb. Appreciate your time. That's Caleb Joseph, Blue Jays analyst, of course, for us, former Jays catcher. As we said, Jays, 4:10 p.m. tomorrow, opening day against the Rays. Barrios and Eflin on the mound. It's the first of four against the Rays. They're going to play the Rays, the Astros, and the Yankees to kick off their season on the road before they come home to another renovated ballpark feeling. It's going to be, we didn't even get to that, like what that feels like again, coming into another new dimension, new infield, outfield. I just excited to check it out. And, you know, Looney Dogs, of course, will be a big one. But
I haven't seen the schedule for that yet. I mean,
Tuesday nights at
Tuesdays,
the ballpark.
But,
so
the full schedule, April 9th. I'm sure you'll have that on your refrigerator.
I actually do. Thank you. Tuesday, April 9th is the first one. Mariners in town. But we're right around the corner. So we can wrap up a little bit here with some of our preseason superlatives that we were discussing. So MVP, I had Bo. You had Gausman.
Mm-hmm.
Most improved, I had Varsho. You had
Vladdy.
Okay, vibes coordinator, fun guy.
I don't know. This is your domain.
Okay.
I'll let you lead the
My
dance.
My initial pick was somebody new that we haven't really got a chance to get to know and appreciate yet. And I think that's Ernie Clement, big Bills guy.
Okay.
I think that's kind of why I picked him. But him, David Schneider, like the youngins, I think that we'll get some good content from them. I think we'll learn to like understand them more. They'll get their moment in the media. Maybe we come to find that they're the fun guys, the vibe coordinators.
Well, because Caleb Joseph believes the home run jacket's coming back, I'll go Vlad because he was not vibing without the jacket, right? And if the jacket's hanging up again, and it slips onto his shoulders, and he gets to smile and enjoy his home runs again, then I think the vibes will follow.
So my pick for this next award was going to be my pick for that, but I had to, I'm not giving people multiple trophies, although you are. Best newcomer. I think Justin Turner is going to be an awesome fit on this team. I also thought he could be kind of the fun guy, vibes coordinator, but I'd rather give him the best newcomer. I think he needs to have a big imprint on this team. He's going to be batting fourth, right behind Bo there. Mm-hmm. To start the season, big expectations. It's a thing teams have tried before, adding the veteran guy, but he's very highly respected. Bo Bichette basically called him out on Blair and Barker and said, well, I want this guy on this team. So what are you going to do? How are you going to influence this team positively in your first season? And I think he could be the best newcomer for the Blue Jays.
Vlad is the Oppenheimer of my award ballot, winning everything. Justin Turner is also my best newcomer because are there other newcomers? Like the one that...
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa?
I know there are a couple, but Justin Turner, the point stands. He's the cleanup hitter they didn't have last year. Mm-hmm. And you know, Brandon Belt had a good season. But he's the guy who was cast in a position that was missing last year. Of course he's going to have the most impact. It may not be the impact they're expecting. It may be disappointing in some regard, but the impact is the impact. He's got the biggest potential footprint on this team. Justin Turner will be the best newcomer.
Okay, the Blue Jays win total set at 86.5. I believe the Blue Jays will hit the over on this. I think that they can win 90-something games. Something is, take that as you'd like. There's 9 options for something. But I don't think that they will win under 86.5.
Yeah, I'm not pounding the table on the under.
We can't have
I would
that
already
be
lose
the way.
Any vibe no. potential.
Give me a 90-something. Let's go.
I will say barely over, though. I don't think it's going to be a massive increase in wins. I think this team is going to be, well, the same because it's a lot of what it was last year. That doesn't mean they can't have success when it matters most. I will take over 0.5 playoff wins over 86.5 regular season wins as long as it gets into the playoffs.
Okay, quickly, the first home run of the Blue Jays season is hit by who?
George Springer, leadoff.
You think? He's pretty good at that. I'm going with the new guy. Justin Turner makes a good impression at the drop tomorrow. That's exciting. I'm so fired up for Blue Jays baseball. Get ready because it's a long year ahead. World Series champ, might have to go with those Dodgers, but...
Braves,
okay. Well, we put that in now. We can always edit it down the road. That was a fun one. Fan pregame. Ailish and Justin, we're off tomorrow as the Blue Jays are on at 4 p.m. I hope everybody gets a great opportunity to watch and enjoy. We'll see you on Friday.